हरि सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Text 20. Material logic talks nonsense, sometimes at the end, to bring perfection to the soul. Frightened material logic accepts the existence of God. Yeah. So, in other words, one's going to work on this element of just the logic, but because the nature of the soul is to accept the supreme. Therefore, at some point, even one goes so far into this logical thing, then they, being frightened of material, frightened material logic, because they're not able to get what they're looking for, right? Because the idea is this logic will make everything work, it'll make everything perfect, but we see with time it doesn't. You know, it's just like. This means the particular flavor of what's going on now, cultural things, started back in the 60s, right? We're supposed to be doing something new and latest and up to date. But actually, it's already 50 years old, you know? I'm saying it is. It means when this whole thing of being free, not following anything and all that, that, you know, just doing something completely different. Like where you see back the Beats, they dressed like everybody else, fit in, had jobs and all that. They just like to do something a little bit different than others, right? They didn't completely reject the society. You know, they fit right in. They were professionals. They were top guys. But with the 60s, then this idea completely alternative. You don't have to follow any kind of culture that anybody's followed before, any value system that anyone had before, anything like that. But, you know, the idea is that was new, fresh. It's 50 years old. That's not new and fresh. Right? In the 60s, that would mean that's 1910. Yeah. Do you understand? You would say the 50s are archaic. 10 years. 50 years? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that anybody who's intelligent sees this is not working. Right, so then one becomes, then that material logic, when it becomes afraid that it's not giving the results, accepts the existence of God. Because if you can get by without it, gives you more freedom. Right? But if it's not working, that means someone else is a little bit bigger. Right? So commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Pure spiritual logic is the natural endowment of the soul. Still, when he is imprisoned in the world of matter, the soul, always meditating on matter, thinks mixed logic is better. Right? Because a pure logic, pure spiritual logic, then that's the common ground of all souls, that everybody is servant of God. Right? God's the supreme. But he thinks mixed logic is better, because then the modes of nature are there, you can go through things in your own way, do whatever you like to do. Right? You don't have to follow the laws of God. Right? But the thing is what is logic based on? What is science based on?
On laws.
On laws, right? And where did they get the laws? They didn't make them up. Like go to the physicists, right? They have these mathematical theorems. Did they create them? No, they may have discovered them, but that means they already existed. Right? If we say you know, Columbus discovered America. Does that mean when he came up on the horizon, then, then you know, it happened? It kind of rose up out of the sea and all that? You know, and that was the problem, is that the only reason he would have noticed, because he had to, his boat wasn't going anywhere, and he had to get off the boat, and then he was on dry land, right? You know, and then he knew someone did this to them. They didn't want him to get across the ocean, and that was America Vespucci. Right? So therefore now he's discovered America, but he named it after this guy that caused all the trouble. Right? Isn't that how the history goes? Yeah, something like that?
Something like that.
Okay. Yeah. So the point is they're discovering laws that already exist. The natural laws of nature are already existing. Right? So it's a matter of, but we think the mixed logic, no, just by using that, my own intelligence, then I'll figure it out. But the problem is what's around one is unlimited. They take one little thing, one atom, and, you know, they can crack their head all day about the calculations that it requires to show how the atom works and all the little things flying around in it. And that's one atom. How many atoms in a body? Right? In this case, only one, right? But does that make sense? It depends on which body you're looking at, okay? So, does that make sense? So the point is it's beyond what they can do. So when one comes frightened that one can't figure this out, then one turns to this. It is rare in this world to find a follower of pure logic, the logic that is beyond matter. Only those fortunate souls who know the secrets of service to God appreciate pure spiritual logic, for they know the glories of rapt meditation, samadhi, on God. For a long time, the people of this external world have, hoping in this way to fulfill their selfish desires, honored mixed logic. They gave great honor to the ideas material logic gave, but in the end, the people could find no happiness. This material or mixed logic will not leave the soul. Sometimes material logic tries to help the soul, arguing for a great variety of philosophies and speaking in many different ways. Mixed logic did not become happy. Then material logic began to hate itself. Talking and talking, material logic wept and lamented. It said, "Alas, for how long have I labored in this external material world? I have fallen very far away from the soul, my eternal companion. I have rejected my own true nature." Lamenting and lamenting in this way, and now filled with tears, at the end, material logic accepts God as the original cause of all causes, right? Because that's where it starts in the spiritual logic, right? In country after country is found this kind of preaching about God, preaching born from the human mind and from material logic. Udayana Acharya described this idea in his book, Kushamanjali. In Europe and the West, this kind of dry belief in God called deism or natural theology has come from many minds. There it has a certain popularity. When it is thus established by mixed logic, knowledge of God is very incomplete and imperfect. That is because material logic is very weak and unqualified to bring the soul closer to God. Because it is thus against its own nature, material logic cannot elevate the soul. Material logic cannot bring spiritual knowledge or guide the soul. This will be shown later in this book. Right? So in other words, because it's still coming from material logic, fear that I'm not getting what I want, right? Because you have an identity. Fear comes when the identity is questioned. So does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like someone is standing on the edge of a cliff. One gets fearful because then your identity as a vice safe person is brought into question, right? So this material logic has been being applied for so long, but it's not getting results. People have been trying it for thousands of years. Right? It means as it is now, the logic people are using is much less than, let's say, 3,000 years ago with the Greeks. Right? So it's just there's been enough time to understand it doesn't really work well. Right? So then one accepts that idea that there's God, but it's still being done through material logic. This is the weakness. It's not by God's grace, right? In other words, the soul naturally accepts that there's God. But because he puts his faith in this material logic, he's covered by that. Therefore, he's looking in that way. Right? So this means the material logic has acknowledged the existence of the Lord. It's in one way, you can say it's obvious. If you logically look, you say there has to be a supreme power. Right? But it's still coming from the material logic. So the material mind, the material logic, they put together what he says here, deism or natural theology. Right? It's theology based on nature. Right? There's a supreme, God is there, so that aspect. Does this make sense? Right? So that's how you'll see is that therefore all the different religions around the world, though they may accept a supreme God, still their concept of God is still coming from the material logic and the mind. That's why when you say, oh, he's a person, he's this, that, great. What does he look like? Oh, he can't, because that's material logic. Right? If form is material, therefore spiritual means no form. Does that make sense? Yes.
So can we say that this is an element of Nyaya brought into
That's the thing. That is material logic means Nyaya,
yeah.
But not necessarily so well constructed Gautama gave. But it's material logic. In other words, you're analyzing, as we were saying before, with the mind. The mind is bringing in the information, but it's being analyzed, but based on your previous samskaras of what you can get. And then when you do find some options, then the material ego, then the mind with the material ego makes the decision. So all the way through, it's the mind making the decision. But it's based on its experiences, you know, what feelings it got was good or bad, and then its identity. Right? So therefore, it'll be put together in that way. So then, you know, it's there. You can see a nature and this and that. And so, because even when we use logic, we prove God through, you know, the power of nature, what's going on, how it can't be the individual. Right? But at the same time, as then they take this a step further, and then they deal with that person also with the same material logic. So you can't really understand. Yes.
So then Krishna consciousness, when we speculate, then the speculation we have, it's based on material logic, actually. It has nothing to do with reality.
Well, it depends on how you're defining speculate. Is the process of speculation or actually speculating?
No, actually speculating.
Yeah, then because speculating means it's not actually based in Krishna consciousness, not based in Shastra.
It's just product of our mind.
Yes, then it's not actually Krishna conscious. But if you're taking an aspect of, you know, material world, looking at it from the position of what the Shastra says, and then analyzing that or using that speculative process, then it's not called mental speculation if your goal is to figure out how does that connect to the Shastra. You know, I see the Shastra says this, I have this experience, how do the two come together? So you're going to use that process of speculation. But it's based on Shabda, so it's not called mental speculation. Therefore, it's called contemplation. Like that. But if it's not based on Shastra, then it is speculation. You know, if one just takes that and takes some moralistic position and argues from there and gives so many, that's speculation. That's mental speculation. Because it's not actually connected with Shastra, not actually connected with the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So technically, even if you're basing it on the Shastra, but it's not for the purpose of knowing God, it's still speculation. Right? Because the Mayavadis and them, the others, the six systems, they're based on the Shastra. You know? It's just the subtler form. That's the mixed goodness. But most philosophies in that are a little less than mixed goodness. They're just mixed. Okay.
Yes. Sorry, can I make a comment that the way deism or natural theology affects our Siddhanta is some people, they accept Krishna, they accept the conclusions, they accept the process, but they can't understand like Chitraketu's 10,000 wives or an ocean of milk or any Ravana having 10 heads. And so they discount, you know, those, any like mystical or revelation kind of thing, but they simultaneously accept Krishna as being the Supreme Personality.
So in other words, on the level of faith, they accept Krishna.
Yeah.
But on the level of intelligence, they have problems.
Yeah,
so then that means it's there, mixed with that material.
Is this related to also when some devotees have a tendency to reject the culture?
Well, if it's just in general, that just generally means they themselves are not very cultured and they're attached to their own specific culture. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to change or don't want to refine themselves. Mm-hmm. See, because the Vedic culture means the mode of goodness. Mm-hmm. You can only follow it actually in goodness. So much of the time it'll be thought that, oh, this isn't practical. It's only practical if you are trying to base something on passion or ignorance. Mm-hmm. Then yes, it doesn't work. Does that make sense? Yeah. But it means deism means you separate the Lord from the actual reality of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's like God's there, but he's not in control of the world. You know, he lost control, or he doesn't bother with it. You know, he's out playing golf or something. You know, yes.
That is what happened with the other religions, Judeo, Christianity, and Islam.
Basically. I mean, it's just a more or less degree, but yes. I mean, that's what we're talking. That's what he's saying here. In country after country is found this kind of preaching about God, preaching born from the human mind and the material logic. Because that's what it is. When you do, it's always you're trying to compare it to something material.
So why is that, this is the way their scripture are designed, so how is that, or is that
out of the... No, it's not necessarily how the scripture is designed, it's how they're interpreting it. Right?
The Quran doesn't allow it. Personal form from God or speculate about it. It just simply doesn't allow it.
Because speculation is not useful. You know what I'm saying? It's not a matter of speculating. It's a matter of Adam and Eve are walking with God, right? And then they get kicked out of the garden, right? And they stick a sword there, you know, to give some direction. So what does that mean? It means they're supposed to go back to the garden. But going back to the garden means, again, walking with God. Right? But do the religions talk about going back and walking with God, or they just want to be with their family and their pet dog in heaven and having a great time, and God has nothing to do with it? You know, he's a nice guy for arranging it, but hey, I was good my whole lifetime. I earned it. So where's God? Yeah, so then... You know what I'm saying? So the point is that not a material interpretation of what then it's saying? And we're just talking... You know, the first chapter, which is a page and a third long. You know? That's it. It would fit on one A4 size piece of paper. You know, you don't find Bibles that big, right? The Talmud, yes, but not in the, you know, the Christian. Right? They're always A5. So it wouldn't even fit on one page. You know? You know, creation is created through sound. Oh, that's happening in the first chapter. So anybody talks about that? No, because it's all already mental speculation. You know, so, you know, and how many girls for the green embroidered couches? You know what I'm saying? Now it's up to 70. But I read in something before it was always 30. So they're not sure where the 70 came from. I think the people for 30 girls, they weren't going to blow themselves up. But for 70, yes, they'll do it. You know what I'm saying? So speculation, that's all that's going on. Right? Some stick to tradition, most don't. You know what I'm saying? Now, you always have to remember, as we have already gone through before in the course, that anything up to the point of surrendering to Krishna is preliminary to Krishna consciousness. So that someone is trying to be, you know, engage themselves, you know, by proper skills, because you can use those skills in Krishna consciousness, that you're being worried about others, You know, so that element of naishkarmya that there can be used in the Lord's service. The acceptance of that there is a supreme person. That's all. All these are preliminary. So that means anything anybody's doing is preliminary. Right? But then there's the actual Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Yeah. Riti. In this verse, Bhaktivinoda Thakur proceeds exits.
Should be just exits.
No proceeds. So we're not proceeding, we're exiting. Okay, in this verse, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur exits the realm of overt atheism and proceeds into the theistic territory. Okay, that's where the proceeds go. So that means then you're saying that anything profits made from an endeavor should all go into theistic territory. It should not be the atheist should get no proceeds. Right, okay. However, our belief at this stage is categorized as a pseudo-theist, a worshiper of God whose motives are mixed with karma and jnana. In the above commentary, he mentions fear as one reason for adopting such a stance. Right? That's a very important element. Because if you look at most religions, it's all about fear of God. You're bad, then, you know, a lightning bolt will come down and hit you and you'll turn into a little pile of ash. Right? Right out there on the, you know, right out there on the walkway. You know? Right? Funny, it all never happens in winter, like when there's snow there. It always happens in the summertime, right? No? Never seen?
No, never seen.
Okay. In the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, he lists more reasons for theistic beliefs based on moral duty. Belief in God is also a principal moral duty. Morality can never be perfect until man has faith in God, right? Because otherwise, how do you define it? How do you define morality? Because it has to go back to God. Because general morality, don't steal, don't take your neighbor's donkey, as we said. You know, all these different things you're not supposed to do. Right? And so, why? Because God said so. So just to have the moralistic platform without the existence of God actually doesn't work very good. Because if there's no God, there's no standard, so anyone can move this idea of morality anywhere you like.
Practical.
Yeah, it is practical.
So then morality and religion, by those two, they control the masses, basically.
Yeah, but here, generally what we're talking about is religion that's on the moral platform. So it actually hasn't even come to religion yet. That's what it's called. He said pseudo, it's upadharma. Yeah. It's not actually dharma. Because dharma means the nature of the soul, nature of the living entity, nature of everything. That's why everything's being working the way it is. That's actual dharma. It means you leave out the aspect of the soul, but you know the soul is there, then dharma works. When you bring in actually the nature of the soul as servant of God, then that becomes the paradharma, you know, or the transcendental sad-dharma, like that. Does that make sense? You know, daiva varnasha. If you study it without that aspect, it's just varnasha. Like that. So, is that okay? So, belief in God clearly contributes to moral standards in the following ways. One, even with a strong sense of morality, sometimes the attraction of sense objects is so strong that even great moralists are defeated. If the opportunity arises to enjoy immorality in secret, belief in God will act as a preventative measure. God can see what man cannot. If man thinks like that, then he will not be able to perform his acts contrary to morality in secret. Right? Because that was one of the things of where you're not accepting God. Right? It's just a sophisticated moralism. It's not a theistic moralism. Then it's a matter of if nobody knows about it, then do whatever you like. But if anybody finds out, nobody knows you. Right, you know. Does that make sense? Even though everybody's doing that, but everyone will pretend like, you know, you're the bad guy. Right? So then the idea is if there was belief in God, it'll make that platform work better. the platform of morality. Two, by having belief in God, man can die peacefully due to happiness born of his faith. But otherwise, you have no idea where you're going. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, otherwise, a guy can die and know he's going back to that great, you know, golf field in the sky. You know, like that. Does that make sense?
And Dawkins, he talks about as sure as hell. On the other hand, Dawkins, he talks about as sure as hell.
Yeah, as sure as hell, yeah. Yeah, but so he has faith in hell.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Like that. I thought you were saying something about the dog, about going back to the great, you know, how you say backyard of the sky. Three. Everyone will accept that faith in God produces greater tendency to perform pious acts than morality alone. Because just that you're supposed to do good, it's like, why? But if God's there, then okay, then it's something that you got to consider. Four, the life of a moralist with faith in God is more peaceful than that of a person with morals alone. Because he knows what he's supposed to be doing, and so there's less material desire. Five, if God actually does exist, then by faith in him, so much is gained. If he does not exist, then there's still no harm in believing. On the other hand, if God does exist, it is detrimental not to have faith in him. Therefore, a true moralist must have faith in God. Because right? Even if he's not there, it works out nicely. Right? You know, it means Christmas goes on really well because there's some faith in Santa Claus. You know, so even if he's not there, it still goes great. Right? So that's the point, is if you believe in God, your morality will go better. And even if you don't, it means even if he's not there, still, it's going nicely. But now, if you think he's not there and he is there, you got trouble. Right? Because we've already gone on the point that those that believe in God, they're better moralists than those that don't. Six. There is happiness in worshiping the Lord, and that happiness is purer than any other happiness. There is always some disturbance in material happiness, but the happiness derived from worship of the Lord is devoid of disturbance. By belief in God, the tendency towards righteousness in the mind grows very quickly. You know, because there's some authority, so you're working for the authority. One always works better. This means you'll generally see persons who have faith in authority will work better and improve themselves more than someone who doesn't. Right? Seven. Eight. By faith in God, compassion and tolerance become stronger. Right? Because if that's not there, how do you function in society? Right? That you won't. You won't be able to deal properly with juniors, and you won't be able to tolerate anybody else. Right? Nine, by belief in God, there's more eagerness to perform selfless action. Right? Because there's a supreme, so then you can perform those acts for him. You do for him, there's every chance you'll also do for everybody else. Right? And that's your whole idea of the moralism, is you'll do good work for everybody else, selfless work for everybody else. But why would you do it if there's no supreme? Right? Because you hear them talk about it, who's doing it? Right? 10. By belief in God, acceptance of afterlife arises. When this arises, man cannot be disappointed by any event in life. You know, because if there's an afterlife, then things can improve. Yes.
That was a major point in the Christianism, when they cut up this belief in another life. But then you just have a life, and at the end, it would be decided where would you go. If you go to hell. So yeah. Life is kind of on their hands.
Yeah, no, that's there. But then you can also say is afterlife here would also mean that concept of heaven. Oh. You can also take it like that. Because at least that's how the Christians will use it. Afterlife means, not this life, means in heaven. They don't understand the concept of karma. You know, if you throw that in, then also you can get. But you do have people who believe in karma that don't believe in God.
That's true.
Right, you know, so. Oh, brother, even if God does not exist, for the above reasons and many others as well, it is necessary to believe in some form of God. Right? There must be some form of supreme. Yeah. Seeing all the direct results of worship of God, the atheist is defeated by the pseudo-theist. And like Kant, they accept some worshipable object. Though there are differences between Jaimini's Karmakanda, Patanjali's meditation on God, and Kant's fictitious worship, the result is the same. Kant has expressed himself clearly on these points, whereas Jaimini and other proponents of karma are more cautious and do not reveal their minds. But he's made it very clear that it's actually you're just making it up, right? Because you're a moralist, but to make this all go nicely, you're making a deity of the material energy, right? And then seeing that, and that will inspire you to do good and work nicely with others and with the energy. Like, so he's very open about it. But so here he's saying is that these others, Jaimini and other proponents, aren't so open. Mm-hmm. Right? They're showing that they're saying God is there so that you have that inspiration and you work and behave nicely. But at the end, then they don't actually talk about it. Mm-hmm. Right? And so here, Kant's idea is not that this is what will last. But he's saying, but this will help your meditation. This will help you. You know, this kind of meditation will make you, you know, work nicely, make you a better person. Does that make sense? Verse text 21. Bewildered by matter and talking wildly, material logic sometimes declares there are two, three, or many gods. Right? So because of this, we're dealing still with material logic in the mind. It accepts that there must be a supreme, because generally you see, in most cases, there's always a supreme. But then with the material logic, it can be made into so many others. So they can't tell the difference between the Supreme Lord and between the various deputies that run the universe. So then there's always the idea, okay, there's someone who's head of the deputies. And they'll say that that's God. But at the same time, and sometimes it's just, he's just bigger than the others, because, you know, he's got a, you know, bigger stick or something, right? You know, it's like, what's going on now? Now you have, before you had, can't remember. The Titans, they're the ones now, or they're the ones that got defeated?
No, they got defeated.
They got defeated. And what's the group called now? The Olympians? Or?
Yeah,
so the Olympians means gods were there before. They were defeated by their children. Mm-hmm. So now they're the gods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so, you know, it's that's material logic. Yeah. Like that, you know, it's like. Okay, commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Mixed logic may sometimes accept the existence of God. Still, bewildered by matter and always talking nonsense, mixed logic has no power to accept that there is only one God. Sometimes mixed logic thinks there are two gods. Then it thinks there is a God of spirit and a separate God of matter. The God of spirit brings auspiciousness, and the God of matter brings trouble. Right, so now you have two. You have God, you know, and the devil. Right? A philosopher named Zarathustra taught this idea. There's a God of spirit and a God of matter. In his book, Zendavesta, he taught that these two gods are eternal. The devotees of God have only contempt for these old speculations. In the same way, they also have contempt for the atheistic Jnanakanda, philosophy of speculative knowledge, and Karmakanda, philosophy of fruitive work. Zarathustra is a very ancient philosopher. When his philosophy found no honor in India, Zarathustra preached it in Iran. Right? Like that. So this goes back to the time, means he's mentioned in the Veda itself. Right? So that goes way back. Like that. It was by the influence of Zarathustra's idea that Satan, an equally powerful rival to God, made his imaginary appearance first in the religion of the Jews and then in the religion based on the Quran. Then, influenced by Zarathustra's idea of two gods, the idea of three gods, or a trinity, made its appearance in the religion that came from the Jewish religion. At first, they were considered three gods, but then, when the philosophers were displeased with that idea, the Trinity became God. Right, so, you know, so then you're having God Himself, you're having God of the underworld, and then you're having God, you know, the preacher. Right, so you're having these three, but then somehow or another that's not working out. So then they try to adjust. Does this make sense? So it goes through so many levels of. So the Trinity became God, the Holy Ghost, and Christ. At the same time in India, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva became to consider three different competing gods. A very foolish idea. Some philosophers then preach that these three are actually only one God. And indeed, many passages of the Vedic scriptures forbid us to think of them as three separate, independent rival gods. In many other countries, it is seen faith in many different gods simultaneously. Indeed, amongst the countries with the lowest level of civilization, it is difficult to find pure belief in one God. Sometimes Indra, Chandra, Vayu, and others are considered independent rival gods. Right? So, you know, God of the moon, God of the wind, God of you know, heaven, like that. So you have all these different ones. So they have, you know, because it's like what Zeus has the thunderbolt. You know, so that would be Indra, right? Because he makes the rains and all this and that. So these kind of things, it's just they make him supreme. Someone else will make another one supreme, another one this. So it depends just where you are.
Thor in Scandinavia.
Yeah. But I think it's similar.
Yes.
Crocodile, yeah. In Africa, you got the crocodile. But, you know, so you have it all like that. You know. And then for some, it's Eric Clapton. You know. So in any case, they work it out. You know. Everybody has their idea, right? You know.
Sometimes amongst devotees, there is a discussion that God, Holy Ghost, and priest is like Bhagavan Paramatma and Brahman aspects of Supreme.
And what was their previous religion before starting this speculation?
A Christian.
Yeah, of course. Because no Jew would ever come up with that one. Yeah, okay. So, the thing is why, but it means then you're, then who is Christ? Because he can't be Brahman, because then he wouldn't exist.
Right.
So then the problem comes up. You're sorry, Sam, you're saying that's the problem with material logic. It always has these big holes. So he's Paramatma, so Christ is the one sitting in everyone's heart. You know what I'm saying? Do we ever see pastimes where, you know, Vishnu gets caught and, you know, put on a cross? You know what I'm saying? It doesn't exactly work like that, you know? You know what I'm saying? And if that's the thing, then, you know, bless her like that. But, you know, Mary, you know, where's Lakshmi? You understand? So, I mean, you know, he's, you know, if he's Vishnu, then where's the consort? You know what I'm saying? So it has some big holes. And then if you say he's God, then we have even more problems. You know, so it's why would they try to do that one? Why can't it just be there's God and his preacher? Right? Because we have God and the Guru. Right? And then who's the Holy Ghost?
Yeah. Well, that's the
you know, there that can be Paramatma. But the point is but that's not what we're talking here. We're not talking about Bhagavan, Brahman, and Paramatma. That's not the Trinity here. This is material logic Trinity. Like that. This is not. So, therefore, don't use material logic to try to understand it. The point is God's there and he sends the preachers. Like that. And people don't always deal nicely with the preachers. Right? They didn't deal nicely with Haridas Thakur. You know, so then, you know, it's just the way it goes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
Have you heard of Christus as Haridas and Prabhupada, is it? Or coming from Brahma? Brahma.
Lord Brahma.
Lord Brahma.
And then from Lord Brahma is coming?
Some devotees thought Christ would have come. Have you ever heard that? Or that's just
Christ has come, but means in but didn't he already come? I mean,
as
again, or what's the point?
No, some devotees pointed out a similarity in the pastime with suffering.
The pastimes. Oh, I get it. Okay, Brahma creates, and Christ creates furniture. Is that, where's the, where's this kind of, you know, where's it come?
No, I just heard that. You know,
Christ ran after his daughter. I think he said there was one piece of furniture. He really, really loved that furniture. And the guy's trying to take it away. You know, I paid my money. You know, no, no, please. You know, and then his some others had to come and tell him, hey, you know, you made the furniture. He bought it. Let it go. You know. Right? What are these similarities they're talking about?
Well, Prahlad suffered. He suffered. Haridas suffered.
So does the taxi driver, you know, who lives on 33rd Street. You know, he's also suffering. You know, he has to be in his taxi all day and that. You know, so I'm saying like that. You know, it means you go to the hospital. How many people are suffering? You know what I'm saying? So suffering is the only thing? You know, so that's the connection.
No.
You know, I'm just saying, it's just you look at, they're just using, what's the point? Why do we have to connect?
Because it's fun.
You know? I mean, is it Haridas Thakur's Brahma? What about Rupa Goswami? Are they worried about him, you know? You know, is he going to become Martin Luther King or something? Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, trying to, you know, I say, oh, how does this work? You know, so it's not important. In other words, this is a waste of time. In other words, the acharyas give us ways to contemplate, connecting our conditioning, but leaving those points that are material logic. And is it, why does one need that to be have faith? Okay, if Christ is Haridas Thakur, then I can have faith in Vaishnavism because my guy's in there. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is, this is, you know, that's not exactly what you're worried about. You know, and then you have the other, the Jews, right? You had the,
he's our guy.
Yeah, he's their guy, right? You know, so you had this Jewish, you know, a rabbi talking to the Christian priest. And the Jewish guy was asking him, you know, how does your hierarchy work? You know, and so after the priests, and you have, you know, I think, I can't remember all the technicalities, but Monsignor, then you have the bishop, the cardinal, and that gets up to the pope, like that. And then he stopped and they said, you know, what about God? You know, you can't become God? And they said, no one can become God and all that. And then the rabbi said, funny, one of our boys made it. Yeah, so. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, one should not, this is not the way to use that contemplative aspect. To try to connect things like that. Connect things that the acharyas recommend. What they talk about, that's what you contemplate. Otherwise, then, you know, we will see, you know, in a couple of weeks how apasampradayas start. And that's exactly how they start.
Maybe we can start one before then.
Okay, start, yeah, okay, yeah. Put it on, you know, yeah, put it as the next last chapter. If we start it now, he gets enough time to write it in so it can be there. Okay. Okay, in many countries, seeing faith in many different gods simultaneously. Indeed, amongst the countries with the lowest level of civilization, it is difficult to find pure belief in one god. Sometimes Indra, Chandra, Vayu, and others are considered independent rival gods. Different philosophers refute that mistaken idea and prove that Brahman alone is God. Right, so when they come up with these bogus philosophies, though they're, you know, the intent is to understand the supreme God, but then those with good logic can defeat them because there's so many holes in the philosophy. And especially here, then those who are speaking impersonalism.
And that's why they have jihad and such.
Yeah, I mean, because yeah. Yes. Yeah. Different philosophers. Oh, okay. Different philosophers refute that mistaken idea and prove that Brahman alone is God, right? There can't be many gods, there's only just the oneness. These ideas of many gods are only the foolish babbling of ordinary logic bewildered by matter. There is only one God. If there were more than one God, this material world would not be organized so well. Right? Because the thing is this, you see them fighting over stuff. We just see their interactions. Now, if they're in charge of whole areas of the creation, and, you know, they have the kind of attitudes and egos that goes on in these stories, they're going to manage it in their own way. And in fact, if the other guy does it this way, they're going to do it that way just to annoy him. Right? So why does the creation go on perfectly, smoothly? Because there's one controller. Like that. Everybody else works under him. If there were many competing independent gods, they would decree different, conflicting material laws, each according to his own desire, right? You know, so in America, you know, there's gravity, but, you know, and over in, you know, somewhere else in Sweden, there's no gravity, right? That's why they have to keep so many trees, because, you know, you have to have the ropes and keep yourself tied on. You know, stuff like that. But in America, you know, the big open fields and everything, you know, otherwise, you know, the bison would go floating off. You know, it's like, it's a problem. So, you know, therefore there's gravity. Yeah. Who wants bison floating around in heaven? You ever seen a bison?
No.
Bison. Yeah, yeah. So who wants one floating around in heaven? So gravity is there to keep them down there in the, you know, plains of America, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. You know, they're not like cute or something, you know.
How a moose.
Huh?
A moose from Sweden that can float around fine. They're big.
They're kind of...
More cute.
Huh? Yeah, a little bit more. You know, they're kind of funny. Bison, there's nothing funny about a bison. Yeah, there's nothing funny.
That's true.
Okay. Of this, there is no doubt. Looking at the material world, an intelligent and thoughtful person cannot fail to accept the idea that it was created according to the will of a single supreme person.
Oh.
It's just it's only one word on the next page. That's good. Yeah, single supreme person. Okay, Vriti. Here, Bhaktivinoda Thakur insists that deviation from the monotheistic concept of God stem from Zoroastrianism. Right? In his Dimensions of Good and Evil, Sahotra Swami expands on this thesis in a section titled The Zoroastrian Nexus. Okay. Some scholars have tracked core ideas of ancient Greek and Middle Eastern philosophy back to the Vedas. At one point, though, something that India rejected took hold in the West, Zoroastrianism. Here we find both the tie that binds the Western religious tradition and the Vedic heritage, as well as the point at which they departed from one another. Right? Because if you want to track it back, you do have to track it back to India. Right? Like that. Because that's the connection. The Zoroastrianism is what connects the Vedas to the Western culture. Because it was originally based on the Vedas, though they adjusted it. And then those adjustments, that was accepted by the Western. Is that... Zoroastrianism is an ancient doctrine of dualism propagated in Persia, now called Iran, from the Sanskrit Aryan. At some unknown date by the prophet Zarathustra. As a religious faith, Zoroastrianism is almost extinct, but its concept of dualism lives on in Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Right? Dualism meaning there is the God of spirit and the God of material world. Right? Because somehow or another, God can't have any control here. Mm-hmm. Like that. He's created the place, but it's been taken over by the God of the material world.
Oh.
Right? But somehow or another, he still seems to follow those laws and that. I guess he figured that he's smart enough to know it was a good creation. So, you know, he keeps that intact. But the interesting thing is God doesn't have his influence, but at the same time is the jiva is able to get out by having faith in God. You know? Does that make sense? That's nice, but at the same time it puts the jiva in more control than God, actually.
So it has nothing to do with sorrow?
No. He came along, he became popular in the 50s. From the point of view of its Vedic origin, Zoroastrianism history and teachings can be summarized as follows. One, and in ancient times, one Jaruta, Jarasabda, Zarathustra, or Zoroaster, the founding priests of the Magas or Magi clan, right? They still call themselves Magis, they're priests. Departed from the Vedic tradition. Means these four names are the four names that were used. He's referred to. In the Veda, he's called Jarutha. Like that in the Rig Veda, that's how they refer to him. Western historians believe that Judeo-Christianity and Islam share principles derived from his teaching, called Zoroastrianism, the predominant religion of pre-Islamic Iran. Two, the deviation of Zoroastrianism was that it accepted only the Brahman of time, the sun, leaving aside the timeless Brahman, Krishna. Right? So the sun became the main. Even though technically it's supposed to be Vishnu is the main, he is the main god, deity of the sun, but you have 12 Adityas, one of them being Vishnu, the other 11 being, you know, great personalities in the universe. So Varuna is one of them. I think that'll come up as we go through it. Right? So he's accepting the person in the post of the sun god, not actually Vishnu, who is the potency of the sun. Right? Because it's God's potency that it pervades the universe. And the different devatas, they manage that. So they're talking about the manager of the sun, not actually the sun god or Vishnu. So he's accepted just that part and rejected the Vishnu part. The Supreme Lord was identified with the sun god, specifically the Aditya Varuna, who is known in the Vedas as Asura Maya and in the Zoroastrian scriptures as Ahura Mazda. So this is the connection. The Vedas teach that Varuna is teamed with Mitra to uphold the law of Dharma within the realms the sun divides, lights and darkness. Here, Dharma means religious fruit of works that yield artha, wealth, and kama, sense enjoyment on earth and in heaven. Varuna is associated with Yama, the judge of the dead. Yama's abode is the place of reward and punishment for good and evil karma. Right? You see these elements that coming in? Means you're building your Western, you know, religious philosophy here. Four, if, as the Zoroastrians believe, Asura Maya, Varuna is all good, then he is not all powerful. The fact that he must protect Dharma with a watchful eye indicates that evil is capable of opposing his order. Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, relates that a demon named Bhamasura bested Varuna in combat. Thus, sometimes evil gets the upper hand. Five, scholars who specialize in the history of the Western religious tradition believe Zarathustra was the first person to put forward the idea of an absolute principle of evil, whose personification, Angramanyu, or Ahriman, is the first real devil in world religion. Although the two principles are entirely independent, they clash, and in the fullness of time, the good spirit will inevitably prevail over the evil one. The apocalyptic end of time envisioned by Judeo-Christianity and Islam is believed by historians to have been devised by Zoroaster, originally a priest of the traditional religion, who spoke of a coming transformation known as the Making Wonderful, in which there would be a universal bodily resurrection. This would be followed by a great assembly in which all people would be judged. The wicked would be destroyed while the righteous would become immortal. In the new world, young people are forever 15 years old and the mature remain at the age of 40. Could have done better than that. at least 29, right? You know, it's like that. But this is not a reversion to the original paradise. Nothing in the past approaches its perfection. It is the end of time. Okay, so that's his idea, right? So we see that there's all kinds of ideas like this that are come in the... So this is straight their philosophy, right? Because it's not Vedic. We don't see it going on in the local, right? Mm-hmm. Like that. But this came up in those, because it's like the... what was it, the guys with the... the guys with the hills like what we have here. Meru and Sumerians. So the Sumerians, then that's closer to the Vedic. Generally, all civilizations of the world are closer to the Vedic. But somehow or another, Zoroastra, his is different. And then these Abrahamic religions, they all took on his philosophy. So that's the connection. Otherwise, there's more connection between the other world civilizations, their philosophy, and the Vedic. It was actually closer. Seven, those who await this end of time expect to achieve eternal life in a resurrected body of glorified matter, in a celestial earth cleansed of all evil. They expect as human beings to be above even the gods, or at least their equal.
At least.
Yeah, at least. Right. Furthermore, the author argues why the religious traditions in the West remain steeped to this day in materialism. Quote, but the element of bhakti was never systematically separated from the ancient Western version of the doctrine of fruit of work, because body-based duality was rarely questioned. Devotion in the West gravitated towards heavenly material happiness and away from renunciation. This is why modern religion is trapped by self-indulgence. Transcending duality has never been an option in Western religion, rooted as it is in an ancient distortion of the Vedic path of fruit of activities, karma marg. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So, in other words, it's talking about with this body, you're going to perform activities with this body, you know, in devotion to God, but to get to heaven, right? So in other words, you're getting the results of your good work. So it's like the karma kanda. So therefore, the element of renunciation is not there, unless it's a moralistic one, you know, of doing good for others, right? So that aspect then is accepted. But that means it's always going to be materialistic. Because it's all about being, you know, if you're a good Christian, one of the signs, at least in some communities, of being a good Christian is you're well situated socially, right? Mm-hmm. It means you have good money, good house, good facility, you have nice kids, they have good education, they behave very nicely, right? Even your dog's nice, right? You know, like that. I don't know if a good Christian has like a pit bull, you know. So, you know, like that. You know, he's got, you know, a nice dog, a Labrador, you know, a collie, you know, something nice, right? You know, like
great
that. Day. Yeah, great day. And of course the wife insists on that little chihuahua, but hey, you know.
A common sticker is like, God is faithful. They stick on the back of the new car.
God is faithful.
Because he gave him a new car.
Oh, okay, yeah. You know, so this idea that I'm working, getting results, so the idea of renunciation, other than I do good for others and on the platform of morality, then is quite prominent. So it's very hard to get away from that. You find a few individuals who are quite renounced. But generally there are only a few individuals, and there's every chance, if you check the histories, that one time then they were, you know, how you say, sidelined by the mainstream Christians. Like that. Yes.
When we say doing good for others on the platform of morality, that's the body.
Yes, it's the body. So it's all in the bodily platform. Because you're going to go with, the soul is the body, you're going to go with this body back to heaven. That's why you're going to bury it really nicely. But the problem is, you know, generally, if you dig anybody up, you find bones at best, you know. You know, so it's like, you know, at least you won't have to worry. In heaven, no one's overweight. You know, everybody's just bones, you know, hey. Now, what happens if you had a broken hip, you know? Does that mean in heaven you'll be hobbling around? Or, you know, they don't address these very, you know, deep, important questions.
They probably have bone luck in heaven.
Huh?
They probably have bone luck in heaven.
So bone luck. Oh, okay, yeah, okay. But then the thing is, if you're younger than 15, you become 15. But so when they say older, so how old do you have to be between, where's the mark between where you end up as 15 or as 50?
Yeah.
Or 40, excuse me, 40. Right? Life begins at 40, maybe that's what they mean. So maybe it's better to be 40 than to be the 15-year-old, because they really don't know, right? You know, about the 40-year-olds. I mean, but what makes, where's this point where, because there's only these two ages, so that means, that means if you're below 15, below, then you become 15, but if you're 16, you end up as 40, or... You know, I've heard 13 going on 30, but not 16 going on 40. I'm not sure. I don't think that would make a... I don't think you could make a movie with that.
No.
Okay. This karmic orientation is a root, is at root a Zoroastrian theme, whose remnants can be found in modern-day Christianity's doctrine of bodily resurrection. Quote, God has and will yet use the power to reverse the aging process, as the Bible describes it. Quote, let his flesh become fresher than in youth. Let him return to the days of his youthful vigor. Job 33:25. The aged will gradually return to the perfect manhood and womanhood that Adam and Eve enjoyed at Eden. Okay. Still no God, right? That's all about you. The long-standing Orthodox Christian position on the resurrection of the body is succinctly stated by Macrina the Younger. So he only has to worry about the 15. A principal theologian of the early Greek church. Quote, we assert that the same body again as before, composed of the same elements, is compacted around the soul. Okay. So at least there is some difference here between the soul and the body. But the body is the important element. Yes.
Yeah, I recall the one big church meeting deciding that it's 31 this year.
Which church was that?
Chotramara's called it as well.
Okay, but I'm saying that means you know the church, or?
I mean some big kind of church meeting somewhere in the Middle Ages.
Oh, in the Middle Ages, they decided 31. Why 31? Why not 30?
It's kind of an idea of that. Not too young, but also too old.
It depends upon, I would gather that the persons who discussed this were over 30. Otherwise, they probably would, 30 becomes scary, right? Because, they would have tried to do an age underneath that, So I guess in looking around them, if you're 60 years old, then, people who are 30 look, young enough. They're good. They're, they got experience. Well, 16 looks like kids, so that's too... 31. Okay. So does that mean then Christians have a big, sweet 31st or something? I guess we've had to find another. The sweet kind of matches with 16.
May you never get old again.
At least no older than this. Right?
Thrilling 31.
Thrilling 31. Okay, yeah, that could work. That could work. St. Augustine in the City of God suggested that when the bodies of dead believers are resurrected, they will be restored to 30 years of age. Okay. Only off by 1 year. Questions about physical resurrection were heavily debated in the history of the Christian Church, particularly in the 5th, 12th, and 13th centuries. Some theologians who defended a purely spiritual concept of resurrection, that a non-material body is raised, were condemned as heretics. See, I told you, you don't get away with these being too spiritual for long. Right? The Orthodox position was, I am not I if I rise in an aerial body. Right? Means, in other words, I won't be myself if I rise in a spiritual body, because I am the body, right? Yeah. Even though he says it's packed around the soul. So they'll say that the soul is there, but at the same time as then they don't make a differentiation. One Christian scholar, Bynum, comments, quote, materialistic conceptions of bodily resurrection were significant elements of the positions that triumphed as mainstream Christianity.
Oh, is that what he meant?
Yes.
it seems that this idea is strongly coming from Judaism, because they have the same idea. They don't burn the bodies, no nothing. They put them, you know, yeah, like, they preserve them for the...
Yeah, resurrection. Yeah, it means, of course, but, and that would come from Zoroastrianism. Yeah. So it's all come from there, because it means Abraham was from Ur, which is in Iraq, which is just next door. You know, so that kind of thing must have been somehow or another. He had gotten, because his whole thing is there's one God, the one God, the Supreme, that he accepted that there's the Supreme and the devil and all that kind of thing. So it seems to be, it's coming from there. Here it's just because the Christianity thing that it gets published and everything like that. You know, the Jews talk about it, but it's like, you know, if you're not Jewish, you don't need to know about it. So it's not published. That kind of thing.
It's also very touchy. If you discuss it with them, then because they can't explain how is it going to happen. Yeah. So they getting really nervous, you know, specifically about this idea, how everybody's going to come up and go for heaven. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a problem. So now the one thing he says, when everybody's rises from there, because the one that's there is God's making the decision. So why is it? It would seem that Jesus doesn't have much of a part with that, you know. And the Muslims have the same kind of thing, you know. So thing is, now they all rise, but now according to the old tradition, is that cemetery, what was it, to the west of Jerusalem?
Yeah,
that's the one where they rise first from.
Correct.
Right, and then does that mean they just go from there? Go around, or first they do the rounds of all the Jewish cemeteries, then they go around and do the Christian ones, and then they go around. And, I mean, how does it exactly work?
We don't know, but that place is the most expensive.
But that they know is that one's first. But what's second? Nobody knows. Okay.
Nobody cares. Either you first or no.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're not first, you're last. Right? Okay. So therefore, the competitive spirit has arisen. Right?
Maharaj, you mentioned once about the history of Zoroastra, how he was kicked out from India.
Yeah, he was kicked out by Vashishta. That's what's in the Rig Veda. It talks about that. Because he came up with this, he basically placed it, didn't get into it so much here, but Varuna, because he's called Asura Maya, because he protects the demons. So then he's taken that he and the demons are the head. And then Brihaspati and all those, the demigods, because they're opposed to the demons, they're the other way around. So therefore, the supreme god is Varuna and the demons, and the demigods and that, they're on the bottom. You understand? So he's actually reversed it, because Varuna is in the ocean with the demons, you know, but at the same time, he's one of the 12 sun gods. So somehow he's just reversed this whole thing. Right? So you can see it's a bit of a problem. So then Vashishta challenged him, and then, you know, he was removed from India. So then he went to preach in Iraq, because it's far enough west that no one's going to bother you. Because even in Afghanistan, you still have Vedic kings there. Right? But then once you cross that, then it seems that, you know, it's...
More accommodating.
Yeah, more accommodating. Yeah, so then, you see, he didn't go farther than that. He only went that far. He was still, you know, fairly decent. Not as much sand. A little less sand. Anything else?
No? What's the story of Zoroastra? I mean... Where does he come from? Is he a king or is he?
No. He's one of these Magi Brahmins, okay. The sun god Brahmins.
Okay.
I can't remember if he was the one. He was one of the 12. It means there were 12 of these 12 Brahmins that were given by the sun god to somebody because mm-hmm. they were worshiping so nicely. So I think one of his descendants, one of their descendants, or something.
Okay.
It was him. So that's why then they were worshippers of the sun god.
Mm.
But done specifically Varuna, right? Because you have 12 Adityas, so the Aditya that at least he was worshipping was Varuna.
Do any of the world religions acknowledge him? or do they just
Zoroastrianism is one of the world religions, but it's talked about, but it's not very much practiced these days, because when Iran became Muslim, then they basically were evicted. So you do have a group of them in India they're known as the Parsis. So there's not that many of them, but they're the Parsis.
But I'm thinking they had some influence on Christianity, Judaism, Islam, I mean...
I doubt it.
Yeah.
It's only historians go through in that. See, how much does Christianity feel that they're actually based on Judaism?
How much does Islam feel that it's based on
Judaism? Yeah, but the point is... It's directly based, you know. Their man is Jewish, you know. They have to acknowledge Jesus was Jewish, not Christian.
Muhammad was Christian.
Huh?
Muhammad was Christian.
He was Christian.
Yeah, wasn't he?
I'm not sure.
I think he was.
I really don't know.
I'm pretty sure he was.
That'd be fun, yeah. Because they do accept up to Moses. There's common lines up to Moses, and then after that, it seems to take. So, from what I can see, is that when the other tribes, you know, went out of Egypt, crossed the Red Sea, and then turned left, then they didn't and kept going that way. So then, somehow or another, they still accept it up to Moses, because after that, they don't know what's the history. Yes.
Was he sent to
dilute people? That the modes of nature take care. There's always going to be a position of this. It means every Kali Yuga you'll have a Zarathustra. You know, just like, you know, it means you have the six systems of philosophy, right? So there's always someone who comes and takes that position and then preaches that, because it's just part of the modes. Like that. Right? You know, so that's always the flavor that goes on. So that will come up, those people do that, and then it moves on. That makes sense? Because it's always the same thing. Right? Every Kali Yuga, they all do the same thing. You know, somehow this God, they think they're different and unique, but it's the same thing. You know, it's like that. Okay. So end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Sarva Vidha Bhakti Vrinda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaurav.
Amen.